Blog Talk Radio.
For your goddess, for your goddess, come to me. For your goddess, for your goddess, come to me. I need your wisdom for this age. For this age, warrior goddess, warrior goddess, come to me. Warrior goddess, warrior goddess, come to me.
Welcome, listeners of Voices of the Sacred Feminine, at this special day and time, so that we might bring you a very special guest, Dr. Vandana Shiva, the famous Indian scientist and environmentalist, one of the world's leading critics of corporate globalization and the international financial institutions such as the World Bank. You probably know her as the author of many books, including Water Wars, Pollution Profit, and Privatization. If you have my book, Sacred Places of Goddess, 108 Destinations, you can find information about her in there. On my side panel called Gaia Alerts, where I introduce her, her work to goddess advocates. And her reputation and incredible work in the world precedes her, so I'll let that suffice as her bio. She hasn't actually called in yet, but I see what I think might be her number popping up on the screen. So let me see if that's her, and we'll say hello. Hi, is this Dr. Shiva?
It is.
Oh, hello, Dr. Shiva. Thank you so very much for calling. I wanted to get right into our interview because I know
I've been told by my hosts that I need to be at dinner in 20 minutes time.
20 minutes. So let's just make this really quick.
Yeah.
We'll start with Dr. Shiva. I was reading that you got involved as a campaigner on environmental and animal welfare issues because India, which had a culture of compassion that ensured, you know, animals were respected and protected, had come under assault because of fast food chains, factory farms, and globalization, with a rotten food culture. Can you speak about that a little bit, and hopefully we'll be able to get to a few more questions?
Actually, my involvement with the ecological movement started with CHIPCO in the 70s. This was the amazing movement of women from my region in the Himalaya coming out to say we will hug the trees. CHIPCO means to hug, and you'll have to kill us before you kill the trees. The compassion to trees, the compassion to animals is a continuum, because in our ancient civilization, we think of humans as one member of an amazing earth family, and the word for it is Vasudeva Kutumbakam, the children of the earth. It's only in recent times, especially with globalization, there has been an attempt to erode the values of compassion, to make it look like it's part of an inferior culture, and the introduction of Kentucky Fried Chicken, McDonald's, of course, triggered me to act. We created amazing books for children, showing what factory farming is about, what this violence is about. We actually stopped McDonald's in its initial stages. They wanted to open 200 stores in 1 year, and I think they had a trickle here and there. And even now, the McDonald's in India serves the delicious Indian food, because their horrible burgers just don't have a market.
Ah, okay. So at one point I thought people were worried that the McDonald's food was going to be affecting the health of your people, but it turns out that they don't eat that much of the McDonald's food anyway.
Well, actually, it's a tiny elite that goes to McDonald's, and that's what's different between the United States and India. In India, it's the poor, the homeless, the unemployed who eat at McDonald's.
Okay.
In India, it's the rich, because in Indian terms, it's costly.
Okay.
And actually, most people who visit McDonald's visit for birthday parties for children. because children get little toys. And I always say a McDonald's hamburger is attached to a toy. It has no standing of itself.
Okay. Well, now, and also, wasn't, as long as we're talking about McDonald's, weren't they considered one of the most important exploiters of child labor?
In the United States, yes.
But you didn't have that in India?
No.
Okay.
In the formal sector, it's impossible to have child labor here.
Okay. Well, you say as long as the Western world sees the environmental movement and the women's movement as separate and unrelated, that both of those are related to the devaluation of the sacred principle, would you sort of enlighten my listeners about these important interconnections?
Yes. The Western environmental movement presented itself as if it had nothing to do with the women's movement or the feminist movement, even though at the grassroots, whether it's Love Canal or it's women and mothers fighting against the toxic dumping by Grace outside Boston, it's been women who have been the main activists. But they've always been rendered invisible, as in every other field. But the disconnection between environment and women is now reaching very, very intense levels. I just bought a book at the airport, which is called The Plundered Planet. I thought it would say something about how to protect the planet. But it's basically a patriarchal response in how to keep plundering the planet and crushing any worldview that has a sense of the sacred, that has a role for ordinary people, and has the visions and wisdom of women. I see the contemporary point of our evolution as humankind being a massive contest between a worldview of capitalist patriarchy and a worldview of ecofeminism. In capitalist patriarchy, the power of money comes together with the power of domination by men, those who are powerful. And in ecofeminism, it's all life on earth with dignity, integrity, given equal status, given respect, their integrity protected, and out of that coming economies, cultures, politics that doesn't trample on the earth and people. The backlash of capitalist patriarchy is very, very intense at this point. They want to gobble up what remains of this earth. The only thing that will hold it all back is a rising of other views of our place on this earth.
Well, and you're known for your book Water Wars, where you say terrorists aren't just people hiding in caves, but terrorists are corporations. And I believe I read at some point Coca-Cola even wanted to privatize the Ganges. You said something about the rich, abundant rain women have no water because of Coke. I'm wondering, can you tell us what are the rain women and talk more about corporate terrorism?
Well, Coca-Cola wasn't trying to privatize the Ganges. Actually, it is. In Banaras, it is. But in Plachimada, where women rose, and Plachimada is an extremely high rainfall area and had never had a water crisis. This is a village in Kerala. Yet Coca-Cola, with its mining of 1.5 to 2 million liters of water per day, had created a drought for the women. Their wells ran dry, and what little remained was now contaminated, polluted water. Just as the companies that make aluminium say the red mud is totally safe till it starts to kill, as we've seen in Hungary, Coca-Cola kept saying their water, their processes are totally safe till people started to have very, very severe allergies and ailments as a result of drinking that bad water. And women were walking 10 miles to fetch clean, safe water till eventually Mylama, a 60-year-old woman, decided that why should they walk longer? Coca-Cola should shut down. And anyone doing a typical calculus of power would say, oh, there's no way small groups of women can fight this giant corporation. But they did, and they won, and that plant has been shut since 2004.
Wow, that's incredible. One of my scholar friends wanted me to ask you this. It's kind of a three-pronged question. Do you still consider your work ecofeminist? How has your thinking evolved since the volume you wrote with Mies or Mies? I'm not sure how to pronounce it.
Mies, Maria Mies.
And if you believe that ecofeminism is a full-fledged movement, is it filled with theory and action?
Yes, I still see myself as a deep ecologist and a deep feminist, and the two work together. Since Maria and I wrote our book on ecofeminism together, I've written many, many books. Maria's written a new book, her autobiography called The Village and the World. It's wonderful. I recommend it to all. My thinking actually hasn't changed. It's just evolved. It's grown. I've grown in all these years. And I think the beauty of what's now growing as ecofeminism is this new movement for the defense of the rights of Mother Earth, whether it's Bolivia and a male president, Evo Morales, who puts out a universal declaration for the rights of Mother Earth, or the constitution in Ecuador. Around the world, we are seeing people recognize that the Earth, our mother, must be protected. And ecofeminism is not just a philosophy for women. It has to be a philosophy for men and women so that all species, all beings on this planet can be protected.
Well, I'm sure all of my listeners would definitely agree with you there. But Dr. Shiva, it seems like our governments are in collusion with the corporations. They claim to be liberators, but that doesn't seem to be true. We look at what just happened with BP here in the Gulf, and it didn't seem like, BP was really held accountable. I mean, the fishermen aren't even eating their own catch from what people I know in the area say. Or saying. I think our media is also in collusion with the corporations. How did these women that you were just talking about, or how can we do something? I mean, I'm sure many of us feel powerless.
I think the most important thing to recognize is our power comes out of doing the right action. And as Gandhi said, we have to be the change we want to see. None of us are marginals. We are all significant beings on this planet. We've been given a huge responsibility. And instead of defining our role from the basis of where we are in the eyes of governments and corporations, we should see ourselves through the eyes of the Earth. And then we are at the center of our sphere of influence. Small action, actions undertaken by millions of people is the only way we're going to have a shift. In Europe, the economies are collapsing, just as the financial world collapsed in the United States in 2008, triggering all the impacts we are seeing around the world. And when people march on the streets for their jobs, for their pensions, the politicians who are having to obey the orders of the banks are basically saying democracy is not about people. Now, when that starts to be the thinking of government, we have arrived at corporate dictatorship, and we need to reinvent, reclaim democracy. I have called it Earth democracy.
Earth democracy. Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, Dr. Shiva, what are the most important projects you're working on right now, and are you hopeful? Do you see glimmers that we are going to make this shift before it's too late?
Because I don't think through the mind of Monsanto or Coca-Cola or Cargill or all the giant corporations that are devastating this planet, I am hopeful. I'm hopeful that more and more people are recognizing the fraud that's being committed through the fiction of growth, through the false idea of prosperity that's only working for a few, and dismantling the security of the majority. I'm hopeful that across the world we are seeing people defend their land. In India, some of the most important movements I'm involved in are the defense of land. And everywhere the local tribals and the local farmers say, it's our mother. Therefore, we cannot let it be plundered and pirated. Or the work we do with seed saving. Every seed saved gives me hope, because in it lies the future. And the spread of the organic movement and the local food movement is another very, very important source of hope. I think the most important issue is we have to find the one small thing we can do, and that is what will multiply.
So we should all find one small thing and
never think because it's small, it's insignificant. My inspiration to save seeds, which are very small, grew out of the fact that I didn't want a world where every seed was patented and every seed was genetically modified. And that's why I started Navdanya, which means the nine seeds and the new gift, the movement of seed saving in India. And my inspiration was Gandhi's spinning wheel. And when he was asked, he said, do you think little pieces of wood can bring you freedom? He says, the only thing that can, because it's small enough to be in the hands of the smallest person. And that's why it is significant. That's why it is powerful. And with that message, I give my greetings to all your listeners, and bye-bye, Kate.
Thank you, Dr. Shiva. Bye. Appreciate you being on the show. Good night. Well, listeners, I hope you enjoyed that brief interview with Dr. Vandana Shiva. She is incredible. All you have to do is Google her name, and I could have read her bio for an hour. She has accomplished so much. There are so many articles out there by her. She is truly a heroine of our time. She is truly a warrior goddess. Let me just tell you two of her quotes, which I think says it all. One is, in nature's economy, the currency is not money, it is life. I'll say it again. In nature's economy, the currency is not money, it's life. And the other, nature shrinks as capital grows. Nature shrinks as capital grows. The growth of the market cannot solve the very crisis it creates. So that's nature shrinks as capital grows. The growth of the market cannot solve the very crisis it creates. So, you know, with the election not many weeks away, think about some of the things Dr. Shiva said. She has been in this fight for a very long time against multinational companies. We here in the United States, I think, are finally just maybe waking up to it with all the foreign money that's being dumped into this election for November 2nd. Like never before, thanks to the Citizens United ruling by our conservative activist Supreme Court. So think about some of the catchphrases Dr. Shiva said. She said, we are being fed a false prosperity that corporations in effect, dismantling our security. They're telling us that our culture of compassion is an inferior culture. And they certainly don't understand the connection between the environmental movement and the women's movement and how that's all related to the demeaning and devaluation of the feminine principle. Well, listeners, that will bring us to close to the end of the show tonight. If you were hoping to hear Tim Workman, I have to say, unfortunately, because Dr. Shiva required that I push the show up an hour, Tim will not be able to be with us tonight, but I'm hoping we can get him back on the show before the election. Tim is with Pagan Perspectives and Progressive Pagans of America. We really wanted to talk about how the loss of the fairness doctrine allows Fox News to exist, which I'm hoping more and more people are awakening to the idea it's really no more than a propaganda machine for the Republicans, and it's a tool of big business, the businesses that are dismantling our security, our safety nets. Also, too, I hope you will be with me next Wednesday. It will actually probably be the last show of this month, I'm going to have a wonderful guest on the show, Frank Schaefer. He frequently goes on NPR, MSNBC. You might have seen him on Rachel Maddow. That is the first place I've actually seen him. We're going to be discussing Christian fundamentalism from someone who was once an extremist soldier of Christianity, and he believes Christianity needs to be saved from these fundamentalists. Then in November, I have some wonderful guests scheduled, Professor Jeannie Davis Kimball. She's a scholar, archaeologist, and author. She's going to be discussing warrior women and heroines, relatives of the Amazons, and not in theory. She's going to be talking about some of the peoples that were the ancestors of what we later came to, call the Amazons. Manda Kranta Bose, she's a scholar who wrote a book not too long ago, Women in the Hindu Tradition. We'll be talking about that. And for those of you who have been a feminist for a while, a goddess advocate for a while, Clarissa Pinkola Estes, author of Women Who Run with the Wolves. She'll be with us in November, as will Liz Fisher, the author of Rise Up and Call Her Name, that wonderful Unitarian Universalist curriculum. And finally, Jeanette Clancy, author of God is Not Three Guys in the Sky. I think those are all going to be wonderful guests, and I hope you'll tune in. All of those interviews will be at our regular time on Wednesday nights at 6 p.m. And if you will indulge me, please, I just want to make sure you know that it is finally all organized. The tour to Turkey that I had been promising to be able to send you information about, I'm going to be teaming up with the wonderful Turkish scholar Rashid Ergener to bring you on the trail of the goddess in Turkey. Turkey is a diamond in the rough. It's a melting pot of cultures and spiritualities. We're going to be there for 2 weeks in November of next year, so you have time to save for this. This is the third time I've been there. Each time is special. It will be a trip of a lifetime, a trip you will never forget. It's for men and women. We are going to be doing things like going to Whirling Dervish presentations. We're going to, do ritual. There's going to be time to take sacred Turkish baths. Of course, the men will do theirs and the women will do theirs separately. We're going to visit sacred sites of Isis, Kybele, Magda Mada, Kubaba, Aphrodite, Mary, Artemis, Hecate. And we're only going to take 20 people, so please, book your seat as soon as you know you can make it, and spread the news. Please help me do that, if you would. For the itinerary and details, please go to www.mythic-travel.com. Within days, this link will actually be on my own website, but I think at the moment it might not be. My web mistress is busy working on that, but I don't think she's actually put the Mythic Travel link on yet. So that's mythic-travel.com. And I believe it's about $2,300 for 2 weeks, and it includes almost everything, most meals and things like that. Also, too, please, if you're in the Santa Barbara area in November 13th and 14th, that weekend, please check out the Gaia Festival. That's going to be in Santa Barbara. I'm going to be giving a presentation Saturday morning, almost kind of kicking off the event, and my talk is going to be Sacred Feminine for a Sustainable Future. So I think with that, we will bring tonight's show for a close, a little bit shorter than usual, but that's okay because, wow, what a guest Dr. Vandana Shiva was, and I thank her so very much for taking the time to be with us tonight. She had to leave because they are giving a dinner in her honor, and I appreciate her fitting us in as she did. So as we come to a close, as I try to do with each show, I'd like to leave you with some positive thoughts or affirmations. And I like this simple little prayer. It's a version of a child's prayer, and we all are the mother's children, aren't we? Maybe this is something you could teach your daughters and sons. Maybe this is something, you would like to repeat yourself sometimes. And I thank Jan, one of my Facebook friends, for sending it to me. And it goes like this, very simple. Now I lay me down to sleep. Please help me learn my world to keep. to guard the air and skies of blue, the oceans, lakes, and rivers too. Save the mighty forest lands, the plains, the shores, the desert sands. Protect all creatures wild and free, in air, on land, and in the sea. Well, listeners, remember what Dr. Shiva said. Find just one little thing you can commit yourself to do, and do it. I hope you'll tune in next Wednesday night. Have a wonderful weekend. And I will close off tonight's show with music that is dedicated to another warrior goddess, Sekhmet. This song is called Am Sekhmet, and it's by the wonderful musician Abigail Spinner McBride. Please enjoy.